Hello, this is Tom Bailey from the Thompson Twins, speaking with Suzanne Hunter on the world of arts and entertainment on Brooklyn's Radio.
Now, it's a real pleasure to welcome onto the show Tom Bailey from the Thompson Twins. Great to speak with you.
That's right. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Now, it's great news for fans that you're back touring the UK as the Thompson Twins with an all-new lineup. I believe it's an all-female lineup, and it's got the likes of Angie Pollock from Goldfrapp and others. Tell us about the new team and how this came about and why this year in particular.
Well, you know, it's something I've been doing for a couple of years, and we kind of tested the water a couple of years back with a tour in America. And subsequently festivals in the UK and elsewhere. But the show we're going to be doing in Brighton is, in fact, a smaller venue, obviously, and it's a warm-up for the concerts we're doing later on in the summer in the UK and in America again. So looking forward to that. And the team came together because, you know, the other two Thompson Twins didn't want to do this. So I'm not actually going out as the Thompson Twins. I'm going under my own name, but people remember me, obviously, from that band. And what happened was I started to look for musicians, and pretty soon I ended up with, which by coincidence, with an all-female lineup. And it's worked so well that I want to keep it that way. It really was just one of those coincidences. But I think there's a different dynamic working with women, you know, so I enjoy that. And I guess it's a new experience for me.
No, they're amazing musicians as well, which is absolutely fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the original days, I mean, fans will know that the band formed in 1977, the original Thompson Twins, with Alana Curry, and of course, in 1993, you split from Alana and Joe. Now, you clearly weren't twins. Nothing gets past me. But people say, you know, the term twin spirits. Did you feel as one, and how did the name originate?
Well, the name actually came up years before that, when we were a four-piece in the north of England, and it was a reference to the two characters in Hergé's Adventures of Tintin. Mm. A lot of people know that because I get asked it all the time.
Yeah. You know, it's an obvious question, but I thought for people that don't know.
But the interesting thing is that in the various translations of that cartoon, you know, because it comes from Belgium originally, so it was in French language.
Yes.
And in the original, it was Dupont et Dupont, spelled differently in each case. And so the word twins was actually a joke, because they were from two different spellings, two different
names. Ah, I see.
And the same with the Thompsons, one with a P and one without. But mm-hmm. The idea is that it's a common family name. So it's sort of saying every person, you know?
Yes, yes.
A bit in a way like the Smiths or something, you know, it's just a common family name from the UK.
But of course, it's brilliant. It's a really great concept. I mean, people who love the original lineup will no doubt remember hearing you on the renowned, now that's what I call music, tapes. And I say tapes, showing my vintage there. But, I mean, now we're up to series 96. But I recall Now 2 album, in which you appeared. And I should imagine audiences at the ever-popular Rewind Festival will know all of your albums. And you played there in 2015, and I believe you're planning to go back again this year. How does that audience make you feel? How do you like playing there?
Because I think, you know, to some extent, the 80s pop era, which was a bit of a golden age for pop music in some ways, it has been ignored by a lot of the festival bookers. So what happened, naturally enough, was, because there's a big interest in it, the 80s festival, or kind of 80s specialist festivals, just somehow got born out of that vacuum. And people turn up in their droves. I mean, the Rewind is an enormous thing. You know, they get 40,000 people over a couple of days. And so we're playing to as big a crowd as it's probably ever going to be in the UK. And I really enjoy it, you know, because people are kind of dwelling in their memory of that era, and enjoying it. That's what, probably they're of an age when they were growing up and doing those things for the first time, which for which our music was a backdrop. You know, that kind of thing where you're falling in love and staying out late and doing things that your parents told you not to. You know? Whatever the music you're listening to at that point, it becomes kind of fixed in your mind as a great era.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's a soundtrack to people's lives, isn't it, as they say, and you have a little sort of wry smile to yourself when you think about those moments. But Of course, conversely, Concord 2, the club in Brighton that you're playing to on June the 19th, is a very different sort of club night, if you like. Are you aware that 20-somethings out there know the classic Thompson Twins, or will you be looking to include some more of your contemporary sound as well?
Some do and some don't. Well, of course, I am contemporizing the arrangements. You know, I'm not just doing a kind of carbon cop. We're now in 2016, but...
Yeah.
And, you know, being a contemporary active musician, that's what I do. But by the same token, people won't have difficulty recognising the songs.
Yeah.
Whether younger people know them or not, I think is partly a question of circumstance.
Yes.
Because, you know, some of them have been exposed to them and some not.
That's right. I mean, it's tricky, isn't it, this day and age, sort of, for musicians, because you've got your diehard fans to please, but also some of the younger generation, there isn't much of a back reference to other artists that aren't in this era. But as you say, some people, they've grown up, you know, hearing it, or they've sort of gone back to some of the music, you know, with some of these revivals.
Well, I mean, you hope that the quality is there regardless of its era and its style, you know, because there's something more fundamental about quality than... you know, what clothes it's dressed up in, whether it's fashionable or not.
Oh, definitely. I mean, a good song is a good song with everything that involves.
I do hear radio stations playing music from previous decades, for example.
Absolutely.
And the other thing, of course, is that I've got a new record out.
Yes.
Don't plug so blatantly.
Yes,
I mean,
do
the thing
tell.
Is people are hearing something new from me, and at the Concord, I will be playing that song, and I don't know if I'll get the chance to play it elsewhere, but I'll have a go at it that night for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? You know,
test out.
It'll
be the world premiere of my latest record.
Be there. It's the place to be, isn't it? Definitely the Concord. Now, back to the Thompson Twins just briefly. You know, you had number one hits not only in the UK, but you were very big in the US as well. But I believe in 2014 you found another big listenership in Japan. How did you find the audiences received you there?
Oh, well, we always did well in Japan in the past.
And yes.
So going back there was a similar kind of exercise. But what I had not prepared myself for was the enthusiasm. I mean, I thought that there would be, you know, people showing up out of respect for the past. But they were completely insane, the audiences.
Really?
And really energetic and really up for it. And so we had we played a kind of mini tour of six concerts in Japan, and we just had the time of our lives. It was amazing.
Oh, sounds absolutely.
So looking
brilliant.
Forward to going back there at some stage.
Yeah, sounds great. I mean, was that with the original lineup, or was this with the new team?
No, this is with the new lineup.
The new lineup, brilliant. I mean, you've always, as you mentioned earlier, you've always been a composer, producer, and an arranger for the Thompson Twins. Did you enjoy moving into other types of sounds when you went solo?
Yes, I did. In fact, you know, one thing which success brings is the inability to do those little labours of love and interesting byways that you would do if you weren't so busy, you know.
Yeah.
So when I kind of retired from the pop music scene, I immediately engaged with a lot of the things that I'd put to one side but still wanted to do. So I ended up being a little bit of a dabbler, I think. You know, I had projects in dub music, I had projects in experimental electronics, and projects in Indian classical music, you know. So all of those things were going alongside writing for film and arranging and producing for other people and things.
Oh.
So I haven't stopped working at all.
You haven't sat idle, have you?
Where did you go? And I've been very busy. It's just that I haven't been in the kind of mainstream public eye.
That's right. I mean, you mentioned film music there. Were they new films and sort of newcomer films, or were they films that were quite established?
For films, well, I'm in a variety, but I actually figured out, funny thing, that for me it was more interesting to do lower budget films.
Yes.
Because if sometimes, you know, big blockbuster films, they use music as a way of steering the marketing, you know.
Yes, of course.
Rather than as an interesting kind of artistic engagement with sound and vision.
Yeah.
They say, let's get that famous romantic song and stick it in that scene where the two people fall in love.
Yes.
You know? It's just a way of underlying conventions of the movies.
Yes.
But if you work with a low-budget film, oddly enough, you end up sitting next to the director in a studio saying, let's try this, how can you
yeah.
And it becomes much more interesting. That's my experience.
Definitely much more organic, I should imagine, as well, rather than sort of bunging in a
yes.
populist classic. But, I mean...
People are welcome to take one of my songs and stick them in a film. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Absolutely.
But in terms of my own creative involvement, I like to get in there and say, OK, let's look at the footage and see how we can orchestrate that.
Yes, it's a real art form, isn't it? I mean, talking of constructing the music, I mean, Alana Curry, I believe, was the lyricist of many of the songs and of yourself, the melody. What came first more often than not, the words or the melody, and did the songs write themselves quite easily?
Well, there's a variety of experiences. I mean, I always say, if you're desperate, anyway will do. And the fact is that when we were in writing mode, we were writing songs every day for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know. So,
yes.
And often trying to add ideas that didn't make the final cut. So, you know, you're just trying various different ways.
Yes.
But quite often the lyrics came first and quite often the music came first.
Yes, I mean, you can't be too precious with these things, can you? You have to be able to let things go. If they're not working for the process, then you have to sort of go, okay, yeah. let's
and
lose that idea.
You know, it's a kind of tried and tested experience from songwriting teams that you try and impress each other. You know, I would try and give Alana a great kind of groove to suggest kind of rhythmic possibilities in lyrics.
Hmm.
She would try and give me something that was either catchy or powerfully symbolic that would make me write a certain kind of music. So that's what you have to do. You can't say, well, I've written this thing, take it or leave it. You're trying to lure someone into action all the time.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's a real collaboration, isn't it?
Yeah.
You Take Me Up, it's such an uplifting song. But then, as I say, all the songs in the 80s were inspiring. And I was talking with two men that you toured with not so long ago, Howard Jones and Midgeur. Did you enjoy the vibe of all working together that made you unite together for that 17-date tour?
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful. In fact, it was Howard who was... He was one of the handful of people who kind of twisted my arm enough to get back into it. You know?
Really?
So I have to thank him for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great fun. And, you know, Midge turned out to be... I'd never worked with Midge before, but he turned out to be such a nice guy.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So that was very enjoyable. We had a great time.
Fabulous. I mean...
Bobbing around the States. And,
really? Oh, great. Oh, I've got to see some parts of America then as well and having fun. That sounds good. I mean, of course, you did appear with Midgeur again in possibly the biggest event ever, Live Aid, singing Hold Me Now, which couldn't have been more perfect, I'm sure. How was that experience for you? Will it ever be topped?
In certain ways, no, I guess, because that was the culmination of an era of music and certain group of bands. And also, it was the culmination of a sense of optimism about the future. You know, we felt that we could fix the world.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that it didn't do an awful lot of good, because it did. I mean, that was an amazing result, and it changed a lot of people's lives.
Yes.
Practically.
Yes.
But also, since that time, I think there's been so many bad things happening in the world that our optimism has been knocked out of us a little bit. You know?
Mm.
And that's one of the things that I try to raise as a kind of subtle possibility with the audience when they come back to look and listen again, is to say, hey, you know, let's not give up on that sense that the world could be a better place.
Yes.
Because there are lots of problems that need addressing right now.
Absolutely.
And I've never felt that music should keep clear of politics at all. You know, I think it's an important culture, and the arts in general are an important part of the way that we see, understand, and manage the world around us.
Yes, that's right. I mean, on that subject, I mean, Live Aid concert was about raising funds to eradicate poverty in Africa, but I believe your latest single that you've been raising money for is for the refugee cause, written from the perspective of a refugee. Tell us why you wrote that now and what you hope the single will achieve.
Ah, well, the reason I wrote it was I decided to get back into writing pop songs for the first time in a long, long time, and so I was just doing that and thinking of ideas, and then I heard, by coincidence, the personal story of a young man who happened to be from Afghanistan and originally, and he had been told by his mother, of all people, leave our village, because if you stay here, you will undoubtedly either be killed or fall into the wrong group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you try and get to Europe where it's safer and you can start a new life? And at least then we'll know that someone in the family has escaped this terrible situation. So to please his mother, he takes on this incredibly dangerous journey. As a teenager, you know, and it took him 3 years to get to London. And I won't go into the details of the hardship in doing that. But when he gets there, curiously enough, he starts to think, well, what have I left behind? You know, what have I given up to make this journey? Only in some cases to be rejected and repelled by local people. So I thought, wow, this is an amazingly personal story, a human story that illustrates all these kind of statistical headlines of shock and horror that we hear. But this was a very personal angle on the whole thing.
Yes.
So that's what got me writing the song. And then because I was thinking about that, I got a little bit more deeply involved and went to the jungle refugee camp in Calais and spent some time there and talked to people and realized, you know, I just felt that I had to learn more about this whole question of forced migration to be able to speak from the heart rather than just from a comfortable chair somewhere in London or France or whatever. So I felt it was one of the big issues of our time that we could engage with again and say, yes. No, we don't want this just to be an enormous mess that's arisen through just ignoring the ability of making it best.
Did you find it a very eye-opening experience?
Going to Calais was grim and depressing in some ways, but it was also incredibly enlightening and energizing because you see people whose resources of hope for a better future are not diminished by the worst circumstances and experiences you can imagine, you know. So if they can do it, then we have to kind of stand by them.
It's all about attitude, isn't it, really? If someone comes in with that attitude, and so many great people have come from different countries and have made amazing contributions and pretty great people, really, and what their chosen fields have been.
Yeah,
and if they come with the right attitude,
ways,
it's great, you know?
In many ways, we should see them as the best of the best. They've made it that far. In the words of the song, they've come so far. Let's not kind of kick them when they're down now, because they actually represent the survival of the human spirit.
So it's come so far.
And of course, having done that, I'm not going to put the money in my back pocket, so I thought, let's look for a charity working in this area that makes sense to me, and I like the way that they do their stuff. And it ended up being Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders.
Oh, yes.
You know, they are incredibly clever, but also very courageous. They go where no one else dare, and they do the work, the very difficult work of, you know, looking after the sick and dying and wounded in many cases.
Yes.
In war zones and forced migration camps.
Well, I really hope the single goes very well and adds towards that very worthwhile charity. Remind us the name of the song again?
It's called Come So Far.
Come So Far. And that was released, I believe, in April this year. Is that right?
Well, it's a funny thing. There's probably an official release date. But these days, I mean, once you put a video on the internet, it kind of goes all over the world.
It's there, isn't it? Yeah.
And in fact, our official release date is just coming up now, because we're putting it out as a limited edition on vinyl, as well as the digital downloads that you can get from all the usual places.
Oh, right.
So we decided to call the official release date, I think it's June the 1st, actually. But that's when the vinyl will be posted out to those people who have ordered it.
Oh, brilliant. So that will be from all the fans on your website, I presume.
Yeah. That information is there.
Wonderful.
Including the video if they want to watch it.
Oh, great stuff. I mean, of course, will you be singing? You'll be singing this at Concord. Will you be singing it at other festivals that you're involved in?
I'll have to see how I feel about that. I mean, obviously at Concord, it's a much more intimate crowd. We'll get to play for longer if we want, because there are no curfews and limits on our time.
Yes.
At festivals, you're normally told, hey, you're 45 minutes maximum, you know. And
yeah, get off.
You have to cut the PA 5 minutes after that, otherwise we get fined by the local council. You know, you get those kind of limits to what you do at a festival.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, at a festival, you know, you have to recognise that the crowd is not necessarily all your fans, all right?
Yeah.
You have a duty to kind of pull them in and entertain them and give them something. And if you just kind of shuffle on the stage and say, you know, here's half a dozen new songs that I wrote last week, then a lot of people will go,
Yes.
I mean, give us the hits, Tom.
Yeah, exactly. It's littered in history, isn't it? Like Bobby Darin, when he made a comeback and people just wanted the same ones, and it's like, no, I've moved on, I'm doing this now. So it's a real fine balance, isn't it, for your artistic soul as well?
Well, the
as
way the, I see it is that you earn the permission by delivering a certain amount of recognition factor. You then earn the permission to make experiments and sing a new song and maybe take an old song and deliver it in a new way, those kind of things.
Yes. I mean, I believe you did that as, I think it was during the Live Aid when you did a Beatles Revolution. And you also had, not many people could get Madonna to do backing vocals, I'm sure, but you did. So how did that all come about? Did you just kind of decide on the day, let's do that?
It was actually, yeah, because we were working in New York with Nile Rodgers making a record, and so that's why we played in Philadelphia rather than in London. And so we didn't have our regular live band with us. I kind of cobbled one together out of friends in New York. We had people from the David Letterman backing band, including Felicia Collins, who then joined my band more permanently. But who else was there? Of course, Niall was on guitar. Steve Stevens from Billy Idol's band was on guitar, a real explosive performer. And Madonna, of course. And I think that happened just because we met backstage and said, look, let's sing backing vocals on each other's sets. So we were the backing vocal singers on her songs and she on ours.
Very good. A unique experience, I'm sure. And, of course, with Nile Rodgers on guitar, you're going to be reuniting with him as he's curating a festival called Fold Festival on the 24th of June. And I believe you're going to be performing with him on a couple of tracks. Are you looking forward to doing that again?
Absolutely. I haven't seen Nile for a while, actually, so it'd be good to catch up with him.
Yeah.
What it doesn't seem to be made that clear, but Fold, the name of the festival, stands for Freak Out, Let's Dance, which, of course, two of his famous catchphrases, if not songs. So he'll be headlining every night of the festival with his legendary Chic band.
Yes.
And then other artists in the earlier slots will be people who have some association with him. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping we'll be able to play together on a couple of songs, and it will be a magic moment.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a great festival, and if you're running your own festival, then obviously you want to appear, don't you, on every single night. So I think it's going to be a Chic are great as well, so I think
it's going to be good. It's a bit like a testimonial match, you know. How much he'll kick the ball around, I'm not sure.
True, just see what he feels like, eh? Now, I mean, it's been really, really nice to talk to you, Tom, and it sounds like you're going to have some great gigs at Concord 2, of course, on the 19th, and of course at that Fold Festival, and up there in Rewind as well. So I wish you lots of success with the UK dates, and thank you so much for being on the show.
No, thank you, and I'm so much looking forward to doing those dates too.
Yeah.
And lovely to talk to you.
It's going to be great. And that was my very special guest, Tom Bailey of the Thompson Twins.
Brooklyn's Radio. Loving arts and entertainment.